From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A federal judge just ruled that the government's so-called terrorism watch list violates people's rights and may be unconstitutional. The FBI's Terrorist Screening Center has been maintaining the list for years and currently lists about 4,600 U.S. citizens who face severe travel restrictions, among other things. The majority of the people on the list, which numbers a total of 1.2 million, are non-American. The judge's decision was made on a case brought by the Council on Islamic American Relations on behalf of about two dozen Americans who are on the list. My guest is Carolyn Homer, trial attorney with CARE. Welcome to the program, Carolyn.
Nice to be here.
So first, let's talk about who it was that you represented. I understand about 20 or so people who know that they're on the list were, you know, you brought the case, with CARE brought the case on their behalf?
Yes. So we represented 23 Muslim Americans, starting with an infant toddler who was only 7 months old when the baby was added to the list and subjected to a diaper pat down in the airport.
What?
Ranging to middle-aged businessmen and adults, with everybody in between, especially a lot of college students.
So I understand that this watch list has been maintained since the years following the September 11th attacks, when a number of government agencies came together to sort of consolidate the work that they were doing, or to essentially share information. But it's been largely kept by the FBI's Terrorist Screening Center?
That's correct.
How much do we actually know about what goes into creating this list? Who gets on the list, who gets to nominate who's on the list, does the government keep it all secret?
So we know more now than we've known at any point in U.S. history, in particular thanks to the work of The Intercept and some major watchlisting documents that were leaked in 2014. But overall, the government tries to keep it secret, and even what we do know is incredibly vague. That the government reserves the right to add anybody to this watch list for extremely subjective and vague criteria about engaging in activities that the government considers to be related to a possible suspicion of being suspected of terrorism.
So the 4,600 Americans that are on the list, is that even a definitive number? I imagine, is that something that the government has admitted, or is that something that groups like yours have determined?
So that is a number the government admitted as of, I believe, June 2017. They were required in this lawsuit to produce aggregate data about the watch list contents from the last 10 years.
And so does one generally get a letter in the mail from the government saying you are now on the terrorism watch list, or does it come to a head when you're at the airport and trying to fly somewhere?
You absolutely do not get a letter, and that is the fundamental basis of the due process violation that Judge Tranga found on his opinion on September 4th. So what happens in our experience and with our clients is that when they are crossing a land border, or when they are at an airport, or when they apply for a security clearance or other government license, they are suddenly denied and harassed and detained and interrogated about their religion. And what's interesting is, you know, sometimes if that only happens once, you could imagine it just being, you know, one officer gone awry or one instance of profiling. But what makes it clear that they're on the watch list is they receive the same treatment each and every time they go to an airport or cross a border.
So essentially, you find out the hard way that you've been put on the list. I imagine that it's not like the security person is telling you, well, you're on the terrorism watch list, take it up with the FBI, because people can't really even take it up with the FBI, can they?
Yeah, so we have allegations in this lawsuit about instances where the frontline TSA or CBP screener told individuals that they were on a list and to take it up with the FBI, but there's no real redress, and the FBI will neither confirm nor deny that you are actually on the list.
What are the restrictions? What, as far as you can determine, what are the ways in which the lives of well, let's just restrict this conversation to Americans for now, that the lives of Americans are impacted by being on the list. So are they allowed to fly after extra scrutiny, or are they simply not allowed to fly? And are there any non-travel related restrictions?
Okay, so some of these individuals at various points of their lives have been barred from flying completely. So the no-fly list is a subset of the broader watch list. But even if you're not on the no-fly list, the consequences are severe. They affect your lives and your families, your career, your credentials, even random traffic stops. So most severely, you're subject to lengthy detentions at borders and at airports. Your electronics, the complete contents of your phone and your laptop, are copied and uploaded to government intelligence databases. That information, they is scoured for who your friends, family, co-religionists, people who attend the mosque with you, who those individuals are. The FBI then frequently investigates those individuals and adds your friends and family to the watch list. But we certainly have a multitude of stories of individuals being ripped out of their car at the Canadian border at gunpoint in front of their wives and their children, and then being detained for 8 or 12 hours.
Now, I understand that there are ways in which certain agencies can nominate people to the list, and that those people that you have social media or familial contacts with could also be nominated. So every time you travel or try to travel, if you're on the list, you risk the people in your social or family circle also getting added to the list?
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Wow. So this list, you've talked about mosques and Muslims. As far as you know, how disproportionately is this list, are Muslims included on this list?
So we at CARE have repeatedly asked for the government to provide that information, and they have refused to disclose it. But in our experience, either an individual is a Muslim on this list, or they are some other sort of government activist, like journalists, that the U.S. government has chosen to target.
And so I imagine there aren't too many white supremacist, extreme right-wing armed people on the list.
To our knowledge, there are none. Mm. In fact, the FBI's director of counterterrorism answered questions in June of 2019 to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on this question, and informed her that the FBI considers domestic white extremism terrorism to be essentially an utterly different category than foreign-affiliated terrorism, which is how the FBI has chosen to designate Muslims, even though they are Muslim Americans.
What about the other million or so non-Americans that are on the list? I imagine that being on that list means that you can't travel to the U.S. And that there's no way for you to get off the list or ever try to come to the U.S. Because there's no redress.
Yeah, that's our understanding. So foreign friends and family, especially family members of American citizens, are blocked from getting visas, from getting green cards, from being able to enter the United States at all. And other individuals on the list, if they try to buy a ticket to the United States and show up at a foreign airport, then Customs and Border Protection issues what's known as a do not board advisory to the foreign airport and prohibits them from traveling to the United States.
Wow. So let's talk about how effective this list has been. The whole idea, of course, was that we were supposed to be, this was supposed to be one tool for federal intelligence agencies to prevent future terrorist attacks in the United States. So by restricting the lives of these thousands of Americans and more than a million non-Americans, has the U.S. government, as far as you know, stopped any major terrorist attacks using that list?
To our knowledge, the answer is no. We asked the FBI this question in sworn testimony in their deposition. We asked them, has the FBI ever publicly identified a single instance in which somebody on the watch list has been stopped from committing a terrorist attack or has committed a terrorist attack? And in both cases, the FBI said no.
So one would imagine that if the FBI wanted to protect itself legally from, being able to use that list, that they would tout the fact that the list had been effective, without necessarily giving details. They could certainly cite information. So the fact that they are not saying anything certainly is quite suspicious. So what happens now? This federal judge, what exactly did the federal judge rule on the terrorism watch list, on the lawsuit that CARE, that you brought on behalf of CARE for these two dozen Americans? What did they say was the basis of their opposition?
Yeah, so the judge's ruling has three major pieces. So the first piece is he just acknowledged the widespread harm that came to our plaintiffs from being on the list and for anyone who was added to the list. The second piece was he held that the criteria the FBI uses to add individuals to the list is incredibly subjective and vague and arbitrary to the point that the standards are meaningless. That nobody has any idea why they could get added to a terrorist watch list because the FBI won't disclose it. And even when they do disclose it, it makes no sense. The third thing he found is that the current systems that exist to try and get off the watch list once you believe you're on it are unconstitutional. That the FBI's position is they will give no notice or an opportunity to challenge the fact that you're on the list or the reasons why you're on the list, and that has to change. So what the judge ultimately did was give the parties, so CARE's lawyers and the government, 30 days to propose solutions, to essentially say, this is what should happen to the watch list going forward, and here are the major reforms that are necessary.
So I imagine CARE attorneys are working on this?
Yeah, we are absolutely working on it.
So one even sort of wonders if there is the need for a list. I remember in the years following the September 11th attacks, when there was this political zeal to do something and show that you were trying to do something, lawmakers allowed all sorts of restrictions on people's constitutional rights. But there were already, and there are already mechanisms in place to protect Americans from terrorism, right? People who commit terrorism or are charged with terrorism can be properly prosecuted. Is there even the need for a list?
CARE's position is the entire list should not exist. That it was created by pursuant to an executive order. It has never been authorized by Congress. And furthermore, exactly as you say, if the FBI really believed that the 5,000 Americans on this list were suspected terrorists, the FBI would be charging them with terrorism crimes and bragging about that publicly. But that's not what the FBI is doing. In our experience, the FBI is simply adding anyone to the list that they've gotten even the teeniest little bit of a flag about. You know, it could be something as innocuous as another community member reporting a suspicious Muslim American studying Arabic. Like, those are the sorts of people that the FBI are adding to this list in a way to act like they're doing something. But the list has proved ineffective. It contains far too many innocent people. And anyone who's not actually being prosecuted for terrorism, we believe, needs to be removed completely.
Now, I imagine that there's, human error that gets involved when these sorts of things happen. Muslims, like many other communities or religious groups, can have names that sound similar, that can be spelled in several different ways. I imagine that they're very likely baked into this list, a percentage of people that even by the government standards shouldn't be on there, and they're just got on there by mistake?
Yes. There hasn't been any major Inspector General report in about a decade on this topic, but throughout the early 2000s, the DOJ Inspector General was finding that the error rate for mismatched names, for misidentification, for individuals who were added on the list for unacceptable reasons, that rate was extraordinarily high, like greater than 50%. And
wow.
We, of course, believe that even if individuals satisfy the criteria, that the FBI's criteria itself is just way too broad and has absolutely no meaningful ability to predict who might become a terrorist in the future.
One of the things that struck me as being incredibly egregious as well is the fact that that the FBI would on occasion share the watch list with private entities.
Yes. So we learned in this case that the FBI shares the watch list with more than 60 foreign countries, as well as 533 public entities. And this includes hospitals, universities, animal shelters, railroads, and other corporations that, generally speaking, the FBI considers to fulfill some sort of critical infrastructure function.
Wow. And so somebody might get turned down for a job or turned away from adopting a pet because they were on a watch list?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly, it's to our understanding, all U.S. and most state government employment positions screen against the watch list. Wow. So, like, there are, and certainly all sorts of government credentials. So these include various transportation licenses, licenses to enter ports or airports or military bases. All of those screen against the watch list and are a basis to deny employment and credentials.
We were talking about how there hasn't been any congressional oversight on the terrorism watch list, but hadn't Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar recently proposed an amendment on the terrorism watch list that the House is taking up?
Yeah, Representative Ilhan Omar has been at the forefront of recognizing the civil rights violations inherent in the watch list, and she has been she passed an amendment that requires significantly greater disclosures regarding the operations of the watch list by the FBI and other areas of the government that passed the House. It's probably going to be stalled in the Senate, but we certainly welcome Representative Omar's attempts, which are among the first ever done by Congress, to very seriously look into the FBI's use of the watch list.
I want to pivot to, so I'm imagining that the story over the next month will, you know, there will be something coming out of it, and we'll certainly keep track of what happens when the 30-day period is over. I want to pivot to a slightly different story, but one that still is the basis of a number of violations of people's rights, and that is that CARE is part of a massive coalition of civil rights organizations around the country that are also opposing facial recognition technology. Just like the terrorism watch list can have errors on the names of people, facial recognition is rife with errors, violates people's rights, civil rights. And I understand that CARE is, along with other organizations, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Fight for the Future, et cetera, saying that this is dangerous technology.
Absolutely. So facial recognition technology is getting better, but it's still horrible. I used to work in Silicon Valley. Like, the tech algorithms tend to be racist. They haven't yet figured out how to, they haven't yet figured out how to discriminate or how to separate, you know, individuals who are of different races. And certainly in the power of law enforcement, facial recognition technology is going to result in mismatches and human rights abuses and monitoring that violates 1st and 4th and 5th and 14th and I don't even know how many different constitutional rights.
I understand that CARE in particular has spoken out about the use of this technology by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Yes. So Immigration and Customs Enforcement, right, is going to try and use driver's license databases and facial recognition technology to stop people on the street or in their workplaces and then subject them to deportation. And we consider that to be particularly egregious. Immigration overstays are a civil offense. They are not a criminal offense. And anyone who is in America and just peacefully going about their lives should not be living in fear that based on incorrect and error-filled facial recognition, they may be separated from their families or deported.
Now, Amazon is behind a lot of the software that government agencies are using, and a specific kind of doorbell that Amazon is marketing has been in the news just this week when Senator Edward Markey raised concerns that law enforcement are going to be wanting to use this software as well. So we've got immigration, law enforcement, local police departments, and others that essentially, what did they farm facial, you know, farm identities based on facial recognition technology that's applied to surveillance data?
Yeah, so this all relates to a battle that's been waging in the courts since the 1970s. It's called the third party doctrine, and it relates to the power of law enforcement to very easily get its hands on private data that is in the possession of private corporations. And so what law enforcement does is realize that Amazon or Facebook or Google or anyone else has collected a treasure trove of private data about your biometric identity, and then orders those organizations to turn it over so that law enforcement can use it for their own databases. There have been recent signs from the Supreme Court to try and curtail this. The Supreme Court recognized just a year and a half ago that your cell phone data is protected under the unreasonable searches and seizures under the Fourth Amendment, but it's still a very uncertain and developing area of law that CARE and others are prosecuting to defend civil liberties to the full extent we can.
So this coalition of organizations, I understand, represents 15 million members. And I should say CARE, which is one of the organizations, is the largest Muslim civil rights organization in the country. They're calling for an outright ban on facial recognition technology. Is this because there really has been no regulation? This technology is so new. It's moving so fast. It's being deployed essentially without congressional oversight.
I think that's exactly right, is that the potential for big brother abuses in facial recognition is so high, and the risks are so high, and the technology is so uncertain, and the algorithms are so racist, that we just need to call for an outright ban.
The website that the coalition has put together is banfacialrecognition.com. And on that website, on which CARE and other organizations are listed, they maintain that facial recognition surveillance programs identify the wrong person up to 98% of the time. I mean, that just seems ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Staggering. It's staggering, and it's unacceptable, and no government that is bound by constitutional liberty should be involved in it.
And so law enforcement organizations, departments, and immigration departments can essentially have access to databases that they search for faces on in order to determine whether someone might be charged with a crime or receive a deportation order. These are really serious impacts to people's lives. It shouldn't just be immigrants or Muslims or people of color frightened by this. Of course, they're disproportionately targeted, but all Americans, I imagine, should worry about this, right? This shouldn't be a partisan issue. I imagine conservatives would be up in arms about this.
Absolutely. Facial recognition presents an existential threat to the rights of all Americans.
Give out a website, Carolyn, where people can find out more about the work that CARE is doing, and also keep track of, going back to the terrorism watch list, and what your organization's plans are to submit to the judge, where people can keep track of that.
So the CARE national website is simply www.cair.com. We update regularly about our efforts in the courts and lobbying Congress and around the country. And certainly when the 30-day period expires and we issue our briefing about proposed remedies to fix the unconstitutionality of the watch list, there will be information updated on that website.
Carolyn, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much and have an excellent day.
You too. My guest has been Carolyn Homer. She's a trial attorney with the Council on American Islamic Relations. I'm Sonali Kulhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.